The Source of Life, Commentary for the November 30th, 2024 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. John chapter 1, verses 1 through 4. In the town I grew up in, we lived on a ridge above a steep-sided valley that cut through the western part of the town. As is often the case with valleys, a small stream ran down the course of the valley bottom. Geologists would say that the stream produced that valley through erosion over an exceedingly long time, but as children we had no awareness of such things. We only knew that the creek that flowed there was as irresistible to us as a flame to a moth. We spent many childhood hours down there eating berries that grew beside the stream, catching frogs, and floating stick boats in the gentle current that flowed to Sinclair Inlet. On one occasion, we wondered where the stream began, and we hiked upstream in search of the source. Unfortunately, we ran into an impenetrable wall of thorns of a variety known locally as Devil's Club. A few pricks from 1-inch thorns on canes as thick as our thumbs led us to decide to leave the mystery of the creek's source a mystery still. Intrepid explorers, not deterred as we were, have long sought the sources of major rivers. In the early 19th century, Meriwether Lewis and William Clark, after difficult traveling upstream, discovered the headwaters sourcing the Missouri River. French explorers Marquette and Joliet had discovered the river long before, but had never gone past the river's mouth. They recorded that the local tribe referred to the river as Muddy Water, due to the tremendous amount of sediment the river carries. The nickname Big Muddy has clung to the Missouri to the present day in story and song. Later, about the time the United States was devolving into civil war over the issue of slavery, John Hanning Speke of England began travels in Africa that brought him to Lake Victoria. He claimed it to be the headwaters of the Nile River, but failed to verify it. On a second journey, he traveled the western shore of the lake until he found the outlet that fed the Nile, establishing the truth of his claim. A few years after World War II, two other Englishmen, Sebastian Snow and John Brown, discovered the source of the Amazon River to be a small glacial lake. The often impenetrable Amazon jungle could be to blame for how long it took explorers to reach that source. Rivers are often seen as sources of life. Those who live along them rely on the rivers as a food source, a source for water for cooking, cleaning, and drinking, and a means of transportation. Traveling downstream was an obvious first step. Going back upstream was more challenging. For short distances, a tow rope could be used from shore to pull the boats. But for long distances, the only real solutions were exhausting paddling or poling against the current. This was such challenging work that most who traveled the Mississippi to New Orleans in flatboats would sell the boats to be broken up for their wood and hike back overland rather than try to go upstream to places like the Ohio River Basin. But without the great watery highways the rivers provided, life would have had a much harder time taking root in the wilderness of North America or the jungles of South America. Humanity has not only sought the source of these rivers that sustain life, we have sought the source of life itself. The Bible states that God is the source of life, but because Archbishop Usher's timeline and the idea of creation taking only 6 literal days, approximately 6,000 years ago, is so readily disproven by the various sciences that deal with geology, biology, archaeology, and others, people have been throwing the baby out with the bathwater and claiming that there is no God, no ultimate, intelligent creator of life. On every side of this issue, they fail to see that creationist Genesis is not a scientific text or a history. It is a metaphor for life itself. When we look at the light created on the first day, it makes possible the sun, moon, and stars of the fourth day. Likewise, the sky and water created on the second day made possible the birds and the sea life created on the fifth day. Last, the dry ground created on the third day made possible the creation of the animals and humanity, as well as the life-sustaining plants on the sixth day. It is like each element built on the ones before, spiraling upward together and entwined like a strand of DNA with its four interlocking nucleic acids that are the basis of all life on our planet. We can celebrate the Creator behind all of that. For those who choose not to because they have never seen God or were present for His creation of our world, they are right. It is a matter of choice. One can believe in God as a source of all life, or they can instead believe that life somehow appeared through processes that cannot be replicated. Despite that, awed by modern technology, there are those who are more willing to trust such unproven concepts than are willing to believe in an intelligent creator. Perhaps it is because believing in the spontaneous generation of life requires no commitment to something greater. After all, if everything is generated by random processes, why should we find purpose in our lives? Are our lives like Shakespeare quipped, life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage, and then is heard no more? It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. Were this the case, I would have a tough time getting out of bed each day to continue such a useless drama. But this is why the metaphor of creation in Genesis is so important, not as a counter to actual science, but as a statement that life itself, from beginning to end, is charged with purpose, endowed by an intelligent creator. Our lives are to be lit by that purpose, and in turn, we are to light up the lives of others by bringing them back to that sense of purpose. That purpose is not to dance around regurgitating Archbishop Usher's nonsense about the age of the earth. Despite its wars, treachery, and adultery, and the abuse evil people have inflicted on others using the Bible as an excuse, it makes clear what our purpose is and how the light of that purpose is to shine. We are told repeatedly in its pages we are to love God and to love our fellow human beings, even those who are not so nice. In Genesis, we are created in God's image. What is that image? God is love, it says in 1 John 4:8. We were created to love. That is our purpose. Unfortunately, after we chose to end our loving relationship with the source of love, we decided to repay God's favor by recreating Him in our image, warts of evil and all. While God's true image would lead us to believe that a religious zealot should be someone with a tremendous capacity to love, we have created zealots with a tremendous capacity to hate and kill, invoking such wrath in God's name. Those who do so do not even flinch with a twinge of conscience at the blasphemy inherent in such acts. It is this distancing of ourselves from our intended purpose and our broken relationship with God that causes the first angel of Revelation chapter 14 to call us back to recognize God as Creator, to reestablish our connection to the source of light and love for humanity and our world. That angel is not calling us to die on our sword over young earth creationism. He is not calling us to become martyrs in support of a creation of six literal 24-hour days. Such foolishness trivializes the great themes of love found like so many golden threads throughout the Bible and woven into a pure garment of grace in the life and words of Jesus. Creation tells us to multiply and fill the earth, which we have done, but we forgot the reason for doing so. We were to fill the earth with light and love, and instead have filled it with misery and despair. Jesus invites us to stop dwelling in hopeless darkness and come to the light of love in his presence. In doing so, we will find that darkness cannot overcome light. The opposite is true. Even the smallest light has the power to extinguish darkness. It is time we claimed our rightful place, a place of love and purpose, a place we were created to occupy, not through conquest, dominance, or compulsion, but through love, the most powerful purpose of all. Thank you for listening to this commentary podcast. You can find the written version of this commentary, along with hundreds more commentaries and podcasts, at our website at www.visitstillwaters.com. You can also find links to other articles by the author and links to books written by the author. Once again, that's www.visitstillwaters.com. May God richly bless you and your family.